With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science. Now, normally, we invite an expert in every week to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions, but we've broken with the format and we've been doing a World Cup of Science. You will have heard the round of 16 that was reasonably contentious, and we do have our quarterfinalists. Our quarterfinalists are, it's a hell of a lineup. Isaac Newton against Henrietta Leavitt. Marie Curie against Albert Einstein. Lynn Margulis against Archimedes. Charles Darwin against Vera Rubin. Tasty. Very, very tasty. I'm starting. It's impossible not to. Like with any of these kind of tournaments, you start to try and figure out.
Sorry. You're going to do I'm Rick Edwards?
Yeah, I mean, I would. No.
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 Okay.
Do you want to say your name?
I'm Dr. Michael Brooks.
Well, fine. I'm Rick Edwards. Yeah, fine. There we go. I'm just excited to get into it.
No, I could tell.
Already.
I'm excited too. But, you know, there's breaking with the format, and then there's breaking with the format, you know?
Yes, yeah, sorry. And it is, it's in your contract, isn't it? You have to say Dr. Michael Brooks at least once. yeah, I've started to, when I was pouring back over the round of 16, and I think the right people went through, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm sort of surprised but pleased that Hawking's out.
Yes.
And it did feel right, but it felt a bit taboo. It was like, really? Stephen Hawking? Mm. Like, you know, the world's... Because this current generation, this is who we know of as like the genius that lived amongst us sort of thing.
Yeah, there's no more famous, recently alive scientist than Hawking.
No.
It's not even close, I don't think.
No, I agree.
Who's the next most famous?
Well, I mean, if you ask people now who's the most famous scientist...
They might say Brian Cox,
which is
criminal.
Heart-wrenching, isn't it?
Yeah. Who? What would be a good answer to that?
Well, not Richard Dawkins. not the current Richard Dawkins, anyway.
And that, in a way, that is the shame of Richard Dawkins. And he got knocked out very unluckily, you could argue, by the coin toss.
Yeah.
But the fact that on the basis of his scientific work, he should be held up in
it's
very
sort of
high
like
regard.
He's undermined
the public,
himself,
but I think
isn't
he
it?
Has.
It's like an own goal.
I think he has. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's someone who sort of, I guess, pops into your head. But then everyone else, I think,
I can't think
just
of
like,
anyone that people
no,
would come up
sort
with.
Of go, well, what about, I don't know, like Feynman or someone? But I don't think people know who Feynman is.
Well,
it wasn't even.
I mean, it's
in
interesting
the,
that that's the first time we've mentioned Feynman.
Yeah, yeah. It was like a bit of an error. sorry about that, Feynman. He's making a decent shout.
Yeah.
I think people would probably have heard of Feynman.
Yeah.
But you reach it. I mean, it's nowhere near Hawking. No, nowhere near.
No. I mean, in terms of public acknowledgement, yes, but he was a much better scientist than Hawking.
Oh, yeah.
And so, therefore, he probably should have been in our class 16. But, you know, these things happen, don't they? Upsets happen. Some people don't get to the World Cup and they should do.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way it goes. But no one comes to mind when you think about who's a famous scientist. People might say David Attenborough.
Yeah, that's mental, isn't it?
Scientists who are on TV just can't be the thing. It has to be people who are doing work that is
amazing. Yeah.
And
Hawking sort of combined both, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
And also, you know, with the best in the world, it's a sort of iconic look.
Yeah.
Probably not,
oh, definitely.
Not how he would have characterized it, but it is.
Yeah. I think he knew that it adding to his
voice,
his
like everything about, you know, so the whole package is sort of very memorable.
Yeah.
And he's had a massive film made about him and no one else has really. Yeah.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, would he count?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. But I don't know if.
Still feels quite niche.
Yeah.
He's not mainstream like Hawking was.
No, no.
There's nobody, is there? I mean, literally nobody.
No.
Somebody's going to say Michio Kaku on Twitter.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I think, that's why I mentioned him in the previous episode, actually.
Yeah.
Because he is at least known. Like, he's written enough. And what about, it's a great answer particularly, but Carlo Rovelli?
Yeah, probably. In fact, he's probably the closest thing to Hawking now.
Yeah, writing sort of popular science books, but that are, you know, hard. So I know you don't particularly like the stuff, but
well, no, I like what he does. I'm not a fan of his actual science, the stuff that he works on. I don't think is the answer to quantum gravity, but you know, who am I mean, Rovelli's not going to give a shit about me not liking his work, quite rightly too. But he writes really good books, and he's a great communicator, and he is at the, you know, he is at the top table of physicists.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to give him credit for that. So he's sort of, in some ways, you know, the guy who's going to kind of move into that space in some ways, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, he's sort of positioned nicely.
People's favourite physicist.
Someone that might get a mention, which is criminal, is the Sapiens guy, whose name I can never quite remember.
Oh,
Yuri.
Yuvanova. Harari.
Yeah, Harari. Yeah, that's Harari. It. Yeah. Because I guess he's writing sort of big sciencey books that are very popular.
I'll tell you who should be more well known who isn't. Anil Seth, neuroscientist.
Yeah. But he maybe actually sort of breaks through a bit. Like, I feel like he does have a bit. You see him on TV occasionally, writes popular science books that do pretty well.
Yeah.
He's probably,
I think he's on the rise.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing.
George Church.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone's actually...
Heard of him.
Nobody's heard of him, but he's quite a sort of big player, isn't he?
Yeah. But we're struggling, aren't we, really? And where are the women?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Like, you know, you know, we should be talking about, you know, who should we be talking about? I don't know.
No.
There's, you know, there's lots of female physicists who are good at what they do. Sabine Hossenfelder is
Sabine's
good.
A good shout. Yeah,
I don't think she'd be seen as a top tier physicist. Which I think is unfair, by the way, actually, because I think she does really interesting, provocative work.
That's the thing that maybe sort of stands her in good stead in this conversation is that she is provocative and she's quite sort of she's happy to come out swinging and say stuff that her colleagues aren't going to like.
Yeah, like,
which I always
enjoy. Is full of shit.
Yeah. I mean, she's cut from the same cloth as you. Yeah.
We do get on quite well.
Yeah. So, so there you go. It's a strange situation in a way, in that there is not a massively famous working scientist today at the same level as Stephen Hawking was, and not even close.
No.
No one is even close.
And our last eight here, most of them are very, very much in the past.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm looking through, they're all dead.
All dead. I like my scientists.
and some of them are very
quite a few
dead.
Of them long dead. I wonder if anyone thinks that Elon Musk is a scientist suddenly. You know what I mean, though? I sort of wonder.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder.
Yeah.
He's not, by the way.
It's a worry.
But actually, is there someone like a Demis Habibis? But ooh. No one would really know who he is, but does he still run DeepMind?
I think he stepped away from DeepMind.
I think he might have stepped away as well. But he's the absolute don of AI, or one of.
Yeah. And then you get Craig Venter, who did so much in genetics, you know.
And I think people might have heard of him, actually.
Do you think?
Maybe. When everyone was very excited about the Human Genome Project.
Yeah.
I think probably.
Yeah. But I think he's gone from public consciousness
now.
Yeah. Should we get to it?
Yes, I think we should. There's no point pouring over the people that we should have put in that we didn't.
So sorry, Richard Feynman.
Actually,
I'm not. He was a bit of a git, really.
Yeah, you've met him, haven't you?
No.
Feynman, I thought you
had. No, I didn't.
No. Who was I thinking of? Oh, I was thinking of Penrose.
Oh, the mathematician.
We're okay with
I did
Penrose,
think about Penrose. Mathematician. Yeah.
Okay, first quarter final. Isaac Newton against Henrietta Leavitt.
So, shall I argue for Henrietta Leavitt?
Yes.
Somewhat despondently.
Best of luck here.
So, Henrietta Leavitt, let's assume that you heard the previous episode, but I'm going to just say she made the discovery that these variable Cepheid stars were basically a guide to how far away certain things were in the universe. And she gave us a sense of the magnitude of the universe for the first time. When people thought the universe was actually pretty small and pretty static, she showed us that it was big, and then people used her discoveries to show that things were moving away and therefore must once have been much closer together in, you know, what came to be called the Big Bang. So she laid the groundwork for the whole of 20th century cosmology. She got no plaudits, no recognition, literally just got written out of history.
Yeah.
Loads of white men took her work and published it basically under their own names. And so she's definitely, you know, should be celebrated much more than she is. George Johnson, the science writer, wrote a great book about her, which was called, I can't remember what it was called, but, you know.
Honestly, Take It or Leave It? Missed a trick if it wasn't.
I read it. I mean, it's not a huge book. It's quite a slim thing. I remember reading it on a plane journey, and it's really nice. It just really lays out what she achieved. I have to say, given the context of, you know, her working in Harvard as a woman, quite a low-paid, low-ranking woman, she didn't really get to do anything else with her, you know, scientific life. So that's kind of all I've got. What have you got?
Well, I've got Isaac Newton. Isaac Newton was arguably the greatest mathematician of his era. He came up with calculus.
Yeah.
We had the argument before about whether he came up with it.
Doesn't matter. That it doesn't. Leibniz came up with it,
but he did. As it happens, Newton came up with it first.
Yeah.
He obviously came up with the laws of motion that we all learn about in GCSE physics.
Yeah.
He did loads of work in optics.
Yes. Which we didn't mention last time.
Although you could probably make the argument that old Ibn al-Haytham had done a lot of that optics stuff.
But not with the complexity that Newton brought to it. Newton did experiments on himself, poking a needle into his eye to see what happened to his vision.
Yeah, which is, you know, good luck to him. I think he sounds like he's a bit of a twat. Newton.
Oh, he was definitely a bit of a twat.
Yeah, and he did something slightly against Newton. Is he sort of stopped working. He went off to sort of work for the government, weirdly.
Like yeah, yeah.
He didn't carry on being a kind of scientist.
I think he'd sort of done a lot of stuff.
He had done a lot of stuff. Like, he couldn't... I don't think he's looking back on his career and thinking, oh, I wish I'd made some more breakthroughs in science and maths. You know, he's
coming up
with...
He went and worked for the Royal Mint.
Yeah.
And like, stopped fraud. Basically, people were making fake coins. And he actually did some metallurgy work and worked out and told the Royal Mint what they should be doing to stop them being faked and to do better sort of, you know, better metallurgy. And some of the things they like rejected at the time because he was Newton and people didn't like him. And then about 50 years after he died, they said, actually, that was quite a good idea. Let's do that.
So another one of Newton's ideas was quite good.
So even after he died, he was still innovating.
I mean, he's got a whole branch of mechanics named after him.
Yeah.
It's one of the... So... There is a reasonable chance that someone on the street would be able to quote one of his physical laws.
Yeah,
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Like the opposite and opposite reaction.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, how
equal
many...
Equal opposite.
Yeah, no.
So obviously you're not that person on the street.
And how many other people is that true of? Einstein, maybe.
Literally. I mean, it's a really tough thing, but I think Newton... is strolling through this.
Yeah.
And Leavitt's done very well.
Yeah. She has. But I think Newton's got to go through. And you can't come up with a law of gravitation
and get knocked out,
I don't think.
No, I think you're right.
He's done some really good work.
Well done, Isaac.
Well done, Isaac. You're through to the semi-finals.
Even though you're a prick.
And then who will you be playing in your semi-final? It is one of Marie Curie or Albert Einstein.
Oh, God.
Once again, I've said it before, I'll say it again. This should be the final, probably.
Do you think so? Oh, I don't know about that. It should be a semi for sure.
But it's a quarter.
Yeah. Well, that's the way the draw goes, isn't it?
Yeah, so, it can happen. Can happen. Do you want to do Einstein?
All right.
The most famous scientist of all time.
Which I'm not counting at all, right?
No, fair enough.
Which, you know, fame is not the criteria here.
You've got to think about why he's so famous,
He's
though.
So famous because he's
single... Is it just the hair? The hair helps!
It does help. And the photos helped and his public image. You know, he worked quite hard on that, I think. But, like, talking about his physics first, right? At a time when everyone was saying, oh, physics is kind of done now. We know everything there is to know. We're just filling in the gaps. We're crossing the T's, dotting the I's. Albert Einstein comes along and he says, well, there's a couple of anomalies here in the way that, I think it's the way that electrons interact with materials or something. The experiments say there's something not quite sure about what's going on when things interact at high speeds. And other people were on the case, right, looking at this and saying, But he basically then came up with relativity and started from the premise that nothing moves faster than the speed of light. So how do you account for, or how do you make sure that the laws of physics look the same for everyone? They don't change depending on how you're moving through the universe and all this kind of stuff. And basically put together special relativity, gave us E equals MC squared, sort of which he claims as his. Actually, I'm sort of undermining my own argument here slightly.
Yeah, okay. I'm intrigued by this.
Actually, I mean, for a start, so E is the energy of something.
Yeah.
Equals the mass, M, times the speed of light squared. So this is the equation where you can convert mass into energy and you can convert energy into mass.
Yeah.
So when we were talking about Hawking radiation in the last episode, you know, that energy that creates those virtual particles, they will have a mass that depends on the amount of energy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. So Einstein sort of made several attempts over about, I think, four decades to do the math that showed that E really does equal MC squared. And in every published, I think he published it eight times on it, fudged it in every single one of them.
Okay.
He wasn't the greatest mathematician, if I'm honest. And he's even put a footnote.
He's an ideas man.
He's an ideas man, definitely. He's the one you want at the whiteboard.
Right.
There was one of the publications where he was proving E equals MC squared, and he put a little footnote in saying, of course, this isn't rigorous, but let's carry on.
I think I might have written that in one of my university maths exams, actually. Obviously, that's not right.
I mean, he had a few. And then like other people did prove it and did the maths right and didn't make the wrong assumptions. Like he made an assumption. He used an equation that was only applied to things moving slowly and used it for things moving at the speed of light. And it's like fudged things like this. Other people did it right and then said, you know, I've proved E equals MC squared. And he wrote them letters saying, that's mine. And basically said, I think you need to acknowledge that I did this first. So he was a bit of a, you know, bell end, can we say?
Yeah.
In terms of science. Nice person to other people. So he knew that he wasn't very good at maths. Asked his friends to help him out with the maths. Like Michele Besso helped him out. He also had great admiration for a woman called Emmy Noether, who was an amazing mathematician, working at the time when you couldn't even get a job. She was in Germany. You couldn't get a job at university as a mathematician. So she worked for free for David Hilbert and kind of did really, really strong maths.
Hilbert of Hilbert spaces?
Yeah. Associated with the stuff that was in general relativity that Einstein didn't understand. And he wrote letters to some of his friends saying, can you get Miss Noether to come and explain this to me?
That's quite cool.
So she was good. I mean, yeah, but she was a mathematician, so she doesn't get to be in this competition. But Emmy Noether, she was amazing. Look her up. So Einstein had his weak points, but he kind of knew what they were. And but in terms of science, special relativity, general relativity, so he's put together the whole scheme of how space and time work, how matter and light move through space and time. He makes predictions like, oh yeah, there'll be gravitational waves, and then a century later we work out how to see them.
Yeah.
I mean, he's absolutely bossing it.
Yeah. Is there something in the kind of negative column with Einstein that he couldn't quite get his head around quantum?
Yeah, no, I would say not. So he said, this doesn't quite make sense, and I don't think that's good enough, and there's something missing, and I think we still think that. It doesn't make sense. So a lot of people said, yeah, it doesn't make sense. That's great. Isn't it wacky? Your cat's dead and alive at the same time. And other people, like Sabine Hossenfelder's one, saying, no, actually, this isn't good enough and we need to do better. And she's coming up with other ways of approaching it. Various other people are. Einstein got a bit pissed off with the whole thing and just went off and tried to work on something else.
Yeah.
I think in a sense, he was, again, ahead of his time in that he knew it wasn't working. He didn't like the idea of quantum entanglement and how that works. And actually, you know, that's a still sort of in some ways, you know, a valid point of view in that, like, we don't understand something about space and time.
Yeah.
So he didn't like that. And, you know, and work on that has just won a Nobel Prize now. But there's still sort of questions over, right, okay, so we can do it in experiments, but what does it mean and how do we interpret it? It's still going on. So I think that's not a negative. I think he asked the right questions.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's a big ask to take on Einstein.
It is, yeah.
But if anyone is going to, I think it is Marie Curie.
I think you're right.
Because, and bear in mind that in the round of 16, I didn't say anything about Marie Curie. I just said she's the only person who's ever won two Nobel Prizes in different sciences.
Yeah.
Which is, well, you know, the fact is unprecedented. Never been done since. Like, that is a measure of just what a phenomenal scientist she was.
Yeah.
And I think what's really important here is the context of being a woman working in science and constantly being marginalized, really. So she worked with her husband, and when they're working on radiation, and when the Nobel Prize was first being awarded for that work in 1903, they originally, like the French academics sort of proposing them, said, well, obviously it'll just be your husband and Becquerel. and then
I bet they didn't say that to her.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I guess that the letter just came through and she was like, oh right, well, I definitely and Pierre, to be fair, said, well, no, she's a massive part of this. So she did get it, and then she got, so she's constantly fighting against the sort of patriarchal setup of science, gets her first Nobel Prize. Then she discovers polonium and radium, two very radioactive elements, and that's what she gets her second Nobel Prize for. And she's had quite a tragic life. She was persecuted. She was absolutely destroyed in the press because Pierre had a horrible accident.
Like, yeah, he was
run over by
a horse or something. Yeah, I had the Ladybird book, Marie Curie, and that was like the last page, I think, in that. It was like, oh yeah, and then Pierre's. I was quite traumatised by that.
Yeah, yeah, I imagine she probably was as well. But she
boo-hoo, Murray. What about me?
she ended up marrying another younger physics professor afterwards, which is
she had an affair with him. Paul Langevin.
Yeah.
And it was a massive scandal. And the press ripped into her.
Yeah, said she was, a foreign Jewish homewrecker
because I think she's married. Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, and she was Polish, and that was another. That's why it's called Polonium, in fact.
Yeah, yeah,
named after Poland. And then she. So all this was happening, and the Nobel Prize ceremony, second Nobel Prize ceremony, is coming up, and she was told she shouldn't attend because it'd be inappropriate for the King of Sweden to shake hands with an adulteress. And Marie Curie said, sure, and went anyway. And I fucking love that. Have that.
Massive. I mean,
you
it's
misogynist
nothing to do with
royal
science,
prick.
But yeah. It's massive.
But it's
enough,
big.
Favor,
oh, it's, yeah. It's, it,
it's sort of, you know, that's the kind of gutsy move that wins a game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I it's almost impossible to conceive of a world where Einstein doesn't get through to the semifinals.
Yeah.
But I think that might be where we're. I just
one of the really difficult things, in a way, is that Einstein. I mean, he was an amazing guy, amazing scientist. He was really nice. So he wrote a letter of support to Marie Curie when she was being like hounded.
Yeah,
by
it's
the press.
All sort of contemporaneous. This stuff.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah.
And early 20th century.
And he was
yeah.
a big fan of her work. Mm. And she was there when they had like these big scientific meetings. She was there, but at the same time, he was sort of. He was a bit of a, I don't want to say Lothario. He was still married to his wife when he was having an affair with some other woman, and then he made a pass at that woman's daughter, and daughter told the mother, and they confronted him, and he said, well, you know, you choose which of you gets to marry me after I've divorced Mileva, my wife, which is sort of like, it's a bit of a dick move.
And he's not getting raked over in the press.
He's not getting
Marie Curie.
No, exactly. He's getting away with all of
this.
Yeah,
yeah.
He had a child who had mental health issues, who he just put away in an institution for the rest of his life.
Can I just say that don't want this to get into a character thing too much. I know it is a bit of a factor. I've just realized I've missed out something quite significant about Marie Curie that is purely science based,
okay,
and I think this is one of those monumental discoveries, revelations. So before her, people thought that the atom was just sort of either like inert, certainly indivisible. It was just like or solid. It was just like a lump.
Yeah,
an atom is just a lump. So you've got the, you know, sort of building blocks, and they're just these lumps. And it was Marie Curie who said, no, something is happening inside the atom itself. It must have constituent
that's
parts.
That's big, isn't it?
And she
had like evidence for, I mean, it wasn't just an idea.
When she was looking at, but it was actually through the observations of radium and the radioactivity. That's what made her realize that. And that is, that's colossal, isn't it?
And
also, I know relativity.
Didn't she go and work in the First World War? Didn't she go and help treat patients?
Yes, she did. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not that science, but she applied her scientific knowledge and understanding to help people and to improve medicine. Mm-hmm. So she's sort of
she's great.
She is great, isn't she?
I'm cards on a table. I'd like to put Curie through. Over Einstein.
That's outrageous.
It is.
I'm trying to think why I shouldn't. I mean, Einstein is so. Einstein changed our conception of the whole universe, right?
Mm.
Not that helped Henrietta leave it.
No.
other people would have done Einstein's work, but he did it. I mean, he did it amazingly.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of said that about anyone, maybe.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, that's
I'm not
true,
sure that's
a true
good argument against.
Is it a penalties situation, or are we just putting Marie Curie through? Because I'm not against that.
I think there'll be some complaints. I do think there'll be some complaints, but
I sort of would prefer it if she went through on penalties, yeah. But I don't want her to be ruled out on penalties.
I don't even know how we operate penalties. That's about anything else.
Well, I mean, a coin toss. But we can't do this on a coin toss, can we?
I don't think we can.
I think given
the atomic structure is as...
She had to put up with.
And the stuff, I think the context of her achievements and the fact that she's still the only person to have ever won two Nobel Prizes
in
different sciences.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, that is huge. And also, you know, Einstein was surrounded by clever people who worked with him and fed into his stuff. I'm not in any way denigrating Einstein, but I sort of feel
I think...
He had a lot of privilege, in a sense.
But Pierre Curie and Becquerel, like she was working with smart people as well. Yeah. I
want to. She's going to sneak it.
I want to put her through.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to go with you.
Bye, bye, Albie.
Oh,
you didn't see that coming, did you?
Well. I think there are people in the draw that Einstein would have walked over, but she is not one of them.
Yeah. So we've got. Well, we've set up a decent semi-final: Newton against Marie Curie.
Oh my God.
Okay. All right. I think this next quarterfinal, I suspect, I could be wrong, I think it's going to be quite quick. It's Lynn Margulis against Archimedes.
So Margulis basically showed us how complex life arose, like eukaryotic life, complex cells, bacteria are basically enslaved, or it's a sort of, you know, mutually beneficial relationship, gave us mitochondria, the energy producing centers in the cell. Sort of it.
Yeah.
Worked.
It's
which
amazing
is a huge,
work.
Brilliant contribution. Mm. She fought for it against, you know, all the people who said it was nonsense. She just stood her ground. She was a great person.
I think the problem is that Archimedes in the 3rd century BC basically did everything.
Yeah.
Turned his hand and his eye to all sorts, made massive contributions in you could argue invented fields, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Invented mechanics, invented hydrostatics.
He basically formalized all the knowledge about how the physical world works.
And really applied it as well. He was someone who would figure out the maths and then figure out how we could use that in the real world, applying, you know, the law of levers and stuff like that. I mean,
he was a competent all rounder, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And he sort of did it both ways, which is a subtle thing, but he'd sort of apply stuff that he could see in the physical world to try and solve pure maths problems and vice versa.
Yeah,
that I'm a sort of sucker for that.
Yeah, I just don't think Margulis can stand up against
him. I don't think so. I mean, he directly inspired, you know, people like Galileo and Newton to look at the sort of the mathematics of motion.
Yeah.
You can't. The volume of work that this guy was producing. Yeah.
You'll get no argument from me.
Yeah, he's through.
Sorry, Lynn.
He's through. Well done, Archimedes. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back after this.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
I feel like we've got a similarly kind of one-sided competition here. Charles Darwin versus Vera Rubin.
Mm.
And, shall I? I mean, Vera Rubin gave us the data that showed us that, you know, a massive amount, like 90% of what we thought of as matter in the universe is not matter that we can engage with, understand, see, find, locate. You know, it's just like, it's not in any form that we can get our hands on. Can't do experiments with it. We've tried to find it. We've been looking for it for at least 50 odd years in very serious ways. Like, it's a really big effort in science, and we just can't find it. She was the one that gave us the data that made it like absolutely concretely clear that we have to try and find this and solve this puzzle.
Yeah, and put a number on it. So it's about 90% of the universe is missing.
She was incredible.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
And she was really nice.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm clutching at straws.
Yeah, because what Darwin did, and Darwin really, he just did one thing. He's not like a jack of all trades, like an Archimedes.
No.
But the one thing that he did is extraordinary. He came up with an explanation of how we got where we are. Like, everything in the natural world that you look at, you're like, well, how have we ended up here? He came up with the theory.
Can I just...
And it's so...
What about Alfred Russel Wallace, who was sort of on the same track, just didn't publish anywhere near fast enough?
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I just think the fact that he didn't, and they didn't talk, did they? I don't think.
No.
So.
I mean,
It's a bit like the sort of Leibniz-Newton thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, that, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah, yeah, you're right. Wallace probably is a bit unlucky.
Yeah.
But that's just the way it's worked out.
And Leibniz has got his biscuits, but what has Wallace got?
Yeah, like, and it was such a revelatory theory. And totally against the sort of religious beliefs of the time, against his own religious beliefs, it's up there with the most famous sort of scientific concept ever.
Yeah,
it's incredibly powerful. Explains everything.
Fine. Game over.
Yeah, Darwin's through.
Darwin's through.
Meaning, we've got our semi-finals.
All right.
And they're good.
Okay.
I'm not disappointed in the lineup.
We won't need to go through too much of the detail.
I think it's
almost going to be a gut reaction, isn't it?
It's going to have to be. So first semi-final, Isaac Newton against Marie Curie. So where I am on this, is probably Marie Curie still.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I'm really going on sort of time period and sort of environment and advantages. Like, you know, Newton's just sort of hanging out at Cambridge, chatting to all his clever mates, and
he hated them all.
Yeah, but he's communicating with them. he's falling out with a lot. He's falling out with Hook, isn't he?
Yeah.
And Curie is fighting constantly against being a woman, being a foreign woman in France at that time, not getting given the credit, fighting for the credit, being told she can't go and get a Nobel Prize, and still going. And I'm just like, what an inspirational. Like, this is it. I find Marie Curie much more inspirational than Isaac Newton.
Yeah, okay, I give you that, but I still think, you know, we're talking about who's the best scientist.
I know. And
Isaac Newton's wide-ranging achievements, like gravitation, he sort of sets up the whole of science for the next sort of couple of hundred years until Einstein comes along, basically, and tells us how everything works, sets up the laws of motion. I mean, he's sort of basically worked out how the planets move and why they move in the way they do. Universal law of gravitation is just an incredibly visionary thing. And he does things in chemistry, and he does things in optics, and he's sort of more broad than
than
Marie Curie, who's quite focused on, you know, just her radiation stuff.
Just her radiation stuff, we're saying, are we? She's only got the radiation gear.
I kind of feel like that's true. Like, that's her thing. And I know she doesn't have access to everything that Newton kind of had access to in terms of wide-ranging ideas, more open goals in Newton's time.
Yeah.
Newton was also a complete bell end.
Mm.
Sort of, you know...
What about this? Everything that Marie Curie said about radioactivity and atomic structure is true. Newton's laws have limitations. They've been harsh, but they do.
Yeah, but only
Einstein's come along and said, well, let me tell you what's actually happening.
Yeah. I think that's really
you dozy
underhand.
Fuck Newton.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he had access to the kind of things that would the observations and the kind
of course
technology that would allow that.
But you take my point.
I know he's working
250 years earlier, but
I sort of do. I can't, in all good conscience, say that Marie Curie is a better scientist than Isaac Newton. Are we going to penalties?
Yeah, you're gonna toss a coin there. That doesn't feel right.
It doesn't, but that's I mean, it's arbitrary at this point, isn't it?
It is. We've got four sensational scientists. Heads, Curie wins.
It's a head.
Yes! Have that, Isaac.
I can't believe that Isaac Newton is out.
Also, the heartbreaking thing for Newton is he would have been able to describe the motion of that coin perfectly. We've got our first finalist.
Oh,
is Marie Curie.
God. Right, next.
Archimedes against Darwin.
Oh.
Now, this is a classic. Are you going breadth of achievement and insight, or are you going single exceptional contribution? Because Darwin's contribution, single contribution, is much greater than any of Archimedes' individual ones.
Yes.
I don't think there's any argument there.
And actually, I mean, at this point, we're not arguing for one or the other, really. We're just trying to make sense of this. I don't think there's much of a competition here, to be honest. I think what Darwin did, and this is about who's the best scientist, right?
Yeah.
What Darwin did was undoubtedly exceptional, brilliant, world-changing science that still is being explored and still is being worked on. What Archimedes did, and I want to kind of invoke something that's maybe a bit underhand here, but like, how reliable are all the reports of like what Archimedes did, and maybe he got it from other people or stuff was attributed to him? Like,
yeah,
the Archimedes
yeah, yeah,
screw,
yeah.
The Archimedes screw, that thing that pulls water.
Yeah.
That's
water pump.
Probably not Archimedes, people say. So we might have attributed more to Archimedes than he actually did. And I
do think you have that argument that there was just a lot of stuff available to work out.
Yeah. And we just haven't heard about other people who worked out stuff in the same way.
No.
So I'm quite strongly on Darwin's side on this one.
I think I probably am as well.
In terms of just being a great scientist who does amazing science and changes the way we view everything.
Also, there's something nice about, and I know this is true of Archimedes as well, but doing it all through observation. And you're sort of out and you're out on your boat and you're doing something else, and the whole time you're just making your little notes in your book you're thinking, that's interesting.
Yeah.
These finches, now then.
Yeah.
It's a very sort of, it's like the perfect sort of scientific example, isn't it? Scientific endeavor.
Yeah. And also, he was a good guy, right? He worked against slavery. He sort of condemned slavery publicly, you know, when that was a really unfashionable thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
He was worried about how his work would impact on his wife's beliefs. You know, he was considerate. He had those days. There was a quote from him, wasn't there, where he woke up, he said, I just feel rubbish and stupid and idiotic today.
It's relatable.
Oh, he's so relatable.
Yeah.
Love him to bits. But, you know, bottom line, the science is world-changing. It was extremely painstakingly done. You know, he does all these like little investigations into, you know, earthworms, and he's so curious about the world.
Yeah.
And that's his kind of only motivation. He's not after any sort of positions or anything like that. And then he goes on, after The Origin of Species, he goes on to do interesting observational work and write stuff about psychology and about how certain attributes of human behavior evolved as well. So he's just curious about the world, and in a way that we don't know really what motivated Archimedes. Archimedes was kind of paid to get a job done in some respects.
And you suspect that Archimedes was curious about the world, to be
fair. Yeah.
Look at the
I might have overstated my...
But I think
Darwin's winning
it. I think I'm with you. I think Darwin has... It's probably the theory that I personally have derived most pleasure from in terms of thinking about it and thinking about how we got where we are and where we're going.
And it makes
and
such
that.
Easy sense, doesn't it? It's like you can tell people about it and they're like, that makes sense.
Whereas, you know, going back to poor old Einstein, you're sort of talking about relativity. Yeah, people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, it is artwork. Whereas Darwin, accessible, beautiful.
Relatable.
Yeah. Okay, Darwin's through. Unlucky, very unlucky Archimedes.
He had a good run.
A really good run. And our final in our World Cup of Science, Marie Curie taking on Charles Darwin.
Oh.
At this point,
there are no losers at this point, surely. But I think everything we just said about Darwin still wins out over... I mean, Marie Curie did excellent work. Inspired a great Ladybird book, but she's not Charles Darwin.
Yeah, I don't think
both lovely people.
Yeah,
no character issues at all, as far as I'm aware.
No, it does feel like it's going to Darwin, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, Marie Curie also inspired that terrible film with Rosamund Pike.
Oh, I hated that film actually.
Yeah,
that's not her fault.
It's not her fault.
It was a bad film though. Yeah, feels like we're going.
I feel like Darwin's won it,
and. If you'd said to me at the start, when we began our World Cup of Science, Darwin's going to win, I wouldn't have been like, what the fuck are you talking about?
You wouldn't.
Like
I genuinely.
Really?
Just the process of us talking this through, I genuinely thought it would be Einstein or Newton.
I thought maybe Archimedes might get in there.
No, I never
but
thought
my,
he had the depth.
My point is, I'd be very, very happy to say that the greatest scientist of all time was Charles Darwin.
Yeah. I'm also very happy to say that the inventor of hydrostatics doesn't have depth.
Oh, God. Painful. Really, really painful.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. This whole process has actually sort of crystallized in me that kind of sense of what is good science and what is a good scientist and
what is
should it be inspirational
yes
and I think
what
it should
truly significant
Yeah.
What has advanced our understanding of the world?
Yeah.
Which is all science is.
And I sort of feel a bit like that should be what current scientists are aiming for now, rather than just, you know, doing a job and going home at the end of the day. I don't know if that's really unfair, but it sort of feels like, I mean, not everyone can be a Darwin, obviously.
No,
I like to
no.
think that the attitude going into work when you're a scientist is still the same attitude of like, I'm really curious about how the world works. I hope that's true.
Do you buy the idea? We sort of covered it like quite a lot, that it's getting harder and harder to do anything sort of mind-blowing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we're sort of narrowing everything down. Like, we know so much about, or is that just an illusion, a sort of
The open goals are not there anymore, right? I think that's clear. The other thing that we've done with this series, which is awful in some ways, is the lone genius myth. Right, that you know, all great science is done by a lone genius.
Yeah, no, and it's not true in
any way, shape or form. But these people who...
Darwin's not a million miles off, actually, if you're going to look for one.
Yeah, and Einstein gets portrayed as a kind of lone, iconic genius, but actually surrounded himself with people who would really help and shape his ideas and his work. And obviously, as you said, Marie Curie had Becquerel and her husband and her daughter as well, who also won a Nobel Prize, by the way.
Yeah. Which is not bad work, is it?
Probably should have cited that as...
Smart family.
Does that count as, like, you know, in her favour, her daughter won a prize? I mean, she's done something right parenting-wise, hasn't she?
Yeah, but how would you sort of explain the intelligence that her daughter has?
Well, probably using Darwinian
using
theory.
Using Darwinian theory, yeah.
Yeah.
So, there he goes.
So he trumps.
He does.
Yeah.
He does. Well done, Charles Darwin. You are the greatest scientist of all time.
What a journey.
What a journey, wasn't it? I really liked it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Let me think about what I value.
And basically, that's Charles Darwin.
Yeah.
I'm going to go and learn more about him because I don't know enough. I know that.
Given my... I've read a couple of good... There's some really good biographies of him, actually.
Okay.
There's a slight inevitability, given that I will always bring everything back to animals at some point, that Darwin has won it. And they're thinking about it.
But not one single mention of the octopus.
Ah, okay, we'll have to go back. Eureka is a Stack production presented by Dr. Michael Brooks and Rick Edwards. The production team is Temi Adebayo, Katie Baxter, Luke Moore and Charlie Morgan. Sound design by Katie Baxter. Please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to your podcast. Does make a massive difference. We also really love hearing from you guys, so if you have any burning questions you want us to answer, drop us an email at eureka@stack.london, or you can find us, as always, on Twitter at EurekaPod.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more. And join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.